You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It's 8:06. Nice to have you back here in Madison on this Thursday, July 24th. One more day here in Madison Studio A2, along with producer Parker Olson. And then tomorrow we'll take the show on the road up to Oshkosh and find out what exactly is this air venture thing that's going on with the EAA. But Brittany Merlot is there, so she is off today. She's enjoying all the adventure that comes with air venture. So Chad Holmes is here from 98.9 WXCO. But first, to solve the mystery of coffee from the last hour here.
Oh, boy.
Where, Chad, good morning. How are you?
Doing great.
Okay. So I finished my gas station coffee, and I saw that there was a coffee pot there, and I assumed one of these fine early morning producers, you know, put together a pot. Maybe Parker doesn't drink coffee, but I figure maybe he makes a pot for everybody. I don't know. Maybe Dominic does.
I don't have that know-how.
I poured the coffee, and it was incredibly cold. And I had no idea if it was yesterday's coffee. Does the coffee maker get cool that fast? So I went to go put it into a mug and warm it up in the microwave, and I find this. I have to spin this whole thing 360 degrees. This coffee mug says up north news, and then a little logo right there in the middle. This is not something we made at Up North News. I have no idea where this came from. I can only assume Luke Mathers was dabbling in merchandise, and that this Frankenstein of a coffee mug was one of the early drafts, but it was hidden in the back of a cupboard here in Madison.
I like it.
Chad is not impressed with this.
No,
one
he's
bit.
Not.
No, no. I'm thinking the only thing missing on it, that little circle instead of a Wisconsin, they should have a picture of you on there.
Absolutely. Ooh. Yes. Who wouldn't want my mug on a coffee mug?
Speaking of which, I know you're in Madison today.
Yes.
You see all the great signage I have in my studio. Boy, it looks like you're in a closet there.
Well, there's a reason for that. And if you saw all the office supplies and things on that rack over there,
yeah,
you'd understand that's exactly
tell
where
those
we are.
Folks to get some signage in there. You know,
well,
Parker did get the
Civic Media banner behind him.
There you go.
I did my part.
He's sitting right in front of me, but behind me, Bupkis. But
yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, there's flat screen monitors everywhere around here. I mean, you can get these things for, you know, buck and change nowadays. So I'm hoping next time we have one of these here and we have some nice views of Madison.
By the way, you say you're going to Oshkosh. When are you coming to Wausau? That's the question.
That is a good question.
The Kreitlow Wisconsin tour.
I think you need to come to Wausau sometime because I know you're beloved. I just had Nancy Stensel on from the Democratic Party.
Where I was going to go on that is friends
and,
that are there.
She loves Pat Kreitlow.
Well, we love Nancy Stensel, and I was going to bring her up because if you aren't on Facebook following Chad Holmes, you ought to be at WXCO, and he made note that this morning he had Nancy Stensel on, and let's see, yesterday there was Mary, is it Clues or Cluz of the Wausau,
Mary Clues
of the Wausau Sustainability, Energy, and Environment Committee. There was also Rob Hughes, a teacher in the Wausau District, sharing his concerns about modern education because he is a Herb Cole Teacher Fellowship winner, talking about his 25-year journey about community support for students. So, I mean, you're not just reading sports scores over there when you're doing these local breaks during our morning show.
And it's always great to talk to interesting people. And speaking of Rob Hughes, not only has he been a teacher in the Wausau District for 25 years, and he was very nice. I think they may have taken away his Herb Cole Fellowship Award because he invited me to speak to his class last week. I think they're probably saying, what's that all about? But no, he also has an organization called Wausau Area Food for Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And every Thanksgiving that basically especially, you know, kids that are in the area schools that may be struggling a little bit, who have families who are struggling financially. They raise money and they provide turkeys and ham and really make a Thanksgiving that is much better than it otherwise would be. And we talked about that, and people can donate to that. So again, there's a lot of folks out there doing really good things for this community.
That's awesome. And so let's go back to Nancy Stensel and the discussion there.
Well, she, one reason that I have her on every other Thursday, number one, but today I wanted to talk a little bit about something that, you know, I think a positive where folks can come together, whether you're Republican or Democrat here. But she is issuing a challenge to the Republican Party here in Marathon County to basically, in the month of September, the first full month of school, to have to help our kids not be hungry in our public schools. And of course, there's disagreement from time to time on tax dollars and public money going to anything when it comes to the schools. But in this case, it's almost a put-up time because there are school lunch debts. And that's, and I said to Nancy, I said, if there's anything more depressing as a statement than public school lunch debt, where kids and their families, to avoid being hungry, are in debt for their school lunch.
Yeah.
But the challenge is that in the month of September, for Republicans and Democrats alike to make a donation to one of the area public schools here in Marathon County, whether the Wausau School District or DC Everest and other smaller schools as well, to make a donation to pay off school lunch debt. And then to report that donation to your political party. If you're a Republican, report it to the county Republican Party. If you're a Democrat, report it to Nancy and the Democratic Party. And then at the end of the month, we'll have a scoreboard and see who is able to tally up more in terms of paying off school lunch debt for the kids and their families here in central Wisconsin.
That's awesome. Has she gotten a response from the Republican Party?
Just starting it up.
Okay. So okay.
And I had a raised eyebrow there, and I'm thinking, let's hope that there's no looking for excuses not to do it.
Well, yes. I mean, look, I can see them saying, "Oh, you're just trying to point out, you know, something."
Yeah.
Fine. You can make the political points you want, but you can also, you know, put up or shut up on this matter.
And really quickly, it kind of brings up a point that I actually had a very interesting discussion on Saturday concerning, you know, again, government. And the idea is, well, the Republicans and this person who I think is more conservative said that the people should be taking care of each other, that that local organizations should be taking care of each other.
Huh.
And okay, fine. Okay, I disagreed and I had this discussion, but this is a case where we're doing it the way that they want to do it. We're going to try to raise money through individual contributions. I don't think that's the permanent way of making sure that a problem is solved. But at the same time, here's an opportunity for you to show us that it works.
Yes, because there was something that I heard, I believe, yesterday from the acting director of FEMA. And it's an acting director because, you know, Trump fired the last one for daring to say that FEMA shouldn't be disbanded. And by the way, since that time, Trump has changed his mind and no longer wants to disband FEMA. Needless to say, this interim director was very proud. He was crowing about the response to the Texas floods and said something along the lines of locally led but federally supported, you know, that we had this great response to the Texas floods. No, they didn't. No, they did. I mean, FEMA especially, because Kristi Noem, you know, now requires her signature on anything that costs $100,000 or more. And it caused a 24-hour delay in FEMA's response. Do you know how many lives could have been saved in the first 24 hours? And again, it always comes back to saving a buck versus a life with these folks and saying, well, you know, people ought to take care of themselves. I pay my taxes for that. I pay my taxes so that, you know, whether it's wildfires in California or a tornado in Chippewa Falls or a hurricane in Florida, that, you know, in all these places, there aren't enough resources locally. Nationally, we pull it together and we can help the niches of the country that have an issue. And I don't understand why there is an entire political class that has such a problem with that, unless it's for the more nefarious purposes of, you know, we got enough means to take care of our own, and that's what we're going to do, screw the rest of you.
Well, and it's been proven. It's been proven over and over again that for every dollar that you invest in these programs, you get so much more back, mm-hmm. 3-4 times the amount back. So the idea that, hey, like Tom Tiffany said in his op-ed to the Pilot last week, well, the biggest tax cut in American history and lower and middle class people are going to get back this amount of money. Well, the amount of money that you get back is nothing compared to the amount of benefits that could help save a life or keep your family out of poverty or any other aspect. Again, in terms of, yeah, maybe at the end of the day, you'll get $5 more on your paycheck,
yeah,
you know, every 2 weeks. But in the end, it's going to cost you a whole lot more. I mean, he did not bring up the fact that I've read, and I hope it's not totally accurate, but I have no reason not to believe it, that folks who are on the Affordable Care Act on the marketplace, they're going to see their healthcare costs go up 75% because of this bill.
Yes.
I mean, great. I'm getting a small tax cut, but my premiums are going to go up 75% if I want to have healthcare coverage.
But they only want to focus on the one. Yep. They only want to focus on the one. And when you mentioned, by the way, Congressman Tiffany's letter in the Wausau Pilot and Review justifying the mega bill, I mentioned earlier, and I'm going to say again, I would commend to people go back to the Wausau Pilot and Review and read the response that was put up by somebody named Brandon Lutke from Wausau. Just a very good point-by-point takedown of what it is Tiffany wants you to hear versus what is actually in the bill.
It was wonderfully done, too, because it was very, I would call it, professorial.
Yeah.
It was not an emotional response, and sometimes, and
nope,
I find myself in the same thing, but yeah, that we get overly emotional because there is a reason to be emotional when you feel like people's lives are being affected in a negative way. But at the same time, I think it's a much more effective way of going about it. But say, hey, yes, he appreciated the fact that Tom Tiffany actually responded, because sometimes we don't hear all the time from people like Tom Tiffany after a vote like this. But at the same time, there was things that were left out of the congressman's response. And again, I agree 100% with you that anybody that would like to get a little bit more information generally about what was put into law with this so-called big, beautiful bill would be, I think, advised to read that letter to the editor and other articles that truly try to get to the word that may be operative is big, when there's so much to it.
Mm-hmm.
We're continuing to find out more and more and more about what's in this bill.
Oh, yeah. And that's by design. The same people that criticized the Affordable Care Act and all the other things for being too big created something truly big and bloated and a true boondoggle. Just a couple of seconds left, and I have to follow up on your trip to Vegas. The third-party company that screwed up your ability to access your funds in your bank, has this resulted in any heads on sticks yet, or at least an apology from somebody along the way?
No. I mean, the thing is, I kind of understand, in a sense, they're trying to protect us. But the bottom line is, I think in this era, doggone it, we should be able to talk to a human being.
Thank you.
That's the bottom line on it. Yes. I mean, I can understand almost everything else, but the idea that I could not get a human being on the line, mm-hmm. in order to help me out, that was the thing that was infuriating.
Yeah, and especially somebody, you know, close to home, not overseas, who has no vested interest in getting things done on your behalf quickly. Chad Good Holmes man. Catches local updates on 98.9 WXCO in the Wausau area or on the Civic Media app. Thank you, Chad. We'll talk to you later on.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. Coming up, we're going to have a local update and talk to Sean O'Malley about your money in the markets and Joe Specky as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The Milwaukee Brewers are off today after taking 2 out of 3 in Seattle. I think, what was yesterday's final? 10-2, something very embarrassing. Should have been their 13th win in a row. Instead, it's, 12 of their past 13 games that they've won.
Aw, shucks.
Not quite enough for a free burger. The Brewers are off today, back in action at home tomorrow against the Miami Marlins. Coverage begins at 2:35 tomorrow afternoon. That's right. It's an afternoon Friday game at American Family Field on several Civic Media stations. So again, Miami here Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then the Cubs come into town Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And that takes us to Free Ticket Friday. That is tomorrow, where you will use your Civic Media app to give us a keyword that I will give you tomorrow. And that will put you in the running in a statewide drawing for four tickets to next Wednesday afternoon's Brewers-Cubs game. It'll be the finale of that three-game series. And again, I mean, those are in-demand tickets. And we're giving away four tickets, great club-level seats. But to enter into that statewide drawing, you've got to have the keyword and text us on the Civic Media app tomorrow for Free Ticket Friday. Sean O'Malley joins us now to talk about your money in the markets. And I usually introduce him as somebody who's had a good run on Wall Street, a good career, and then he's back home in Wisconsin. But he's not back home in Wisconsin. He's back on Wall Street working on a special undisclosed project. But they've locked him away in a cubicle with Wall Street right over his right shoulder there to join us for a few minutes to talk about your money in the markets. How are things in Lower Manhattan these days, Sean?
It's a bit steamy here. I got to say the temperatures are no joke, but it's always nice to be back in Manhattan.
Okay.
After working here for so many years.
I was going to say, you put a lot of years in there. Yeah. Let's start by talking about the different ways to measure the economy, because again, there's people that can spin almost anything one way or another, and it takes somebody with a little bit of knowledge to cut through all of this. So let's start with the leading economic indicators. You know, what that is, what we've learned about how how the economy is working, not just for the people, you know, over there within a stone's throw of you, but for Mr. and Ms. Middle America.
Yeah, the leading economic indicators is a collection of data points that is designed to sort of give some sort of sense, because these are typically economic indicators, as the label implies, that lead a lot of the actions that we later see in the economy. So it's designed to be a bit of a forecasting tool, and it's a collection of data points. One of which is the stock market performance itself, which certainly is doing just fine. That's been going along pretty well. It's really the one major positive point in the leading economic indicators. However, we have several that are not nearly so positive. Consumer confidence is extremely low. We also have a slowdown in manufacturing orders. So that means that's going to impact manufacturing production. And we also have a steady increase in initial claims for unemployment. So what we're really seeing is a recipe coming up that, okay, the stock market's going fine. So everybody with enough money to play in the stock market is doing well. But you're seeing consumer confidence, and consumer spending, of course, is the major driver for the U.S. economy. And that's going to continue to soften. Not a good indicator. We're seeing that, again, the manufacturing supply ordering is tapering off, which means manufacturing production is going to be going down in the future because they're not ordering supplies because they don't have the orders to fill from a manufacturing perspective. And with the initial jobless claims continuing to trend up, that means we're going to see unemployment going up. Now, you couple all of that with what we saw with respect to inflation last month, going up from 2.4 to 2.7%, so a pretty significant jump. We are increasingly flirting with the possibility of stagflation rearing its ugly head.
That sounds like fun. and that on top of all of that would be the financial impact on tariffs. Now, I know that there's another headline in the news today saying that Trump is quickly pursuing some other trade deal, but yeah, it's still a far cry from the 90 deals in 90 days. So we're stuck with the impact of the tariffs that he has either imposed or the uncertainty about tariffs that he wants to impose. And where are we at on all that?
Yeah. So far we have obviously no treaties, no treaty agreements, no trade treaties, because nothing has been ratified by Congress. We do have signed agreements with four countries, the most recent of which is Japan, which has resulted in kind of an interesting interpretation from a lot of trade experts. Before, the assumption was that the sort of the floor, the minimum tariff rate would be about 10%. But now, based on these experts looking at what's coming out of this new trade agreement with Japan, they're saying the floor may be rising up to 15%. Now, that's interesting for a couple of reasons, in that that means we could see tariff impacts start to increase a bit. And some of the measures that have already been reported with respect to basically how much money has gone from U.S. consumers to the U.S. government based on the tariff taxes, I'm calling them, because that's basically what they are, year to date is over $100 million. The projection prior to this trade agreement was for $300 million by year end. With this trade agreement and this new 15% tariff floor, the number could be substantially higher than the $300 billion.
So the $300 billion in tariffs, that's those are taxes paid by consumers. And I know the folks
in the U.S. customers.
The folks in the Trump administration can say it till they're blue in the face that foreign governments are paying these. They are not. It's coming from the consumers. We're talking to Sean O'Malley out on Wall Street about your money in the markets. We're going to pause here and then talk just a little bit about crypto, because we discussed it in our last hour with two state legislators who want to ensure that as crypto use spreads, if you go to one of those little ATM machines, that you're not getting scammed there. We're also going to talk to Joe Zepecki, including a discussion about a Democratic state senator who's got something kind of similar to the Contract with America, but for progressives. Good idea, or does it paint politicians into a corner? That's all coming up next here, live from Madison on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to hear from Joe Zepecki in just a bit. First, we're going to wrap up our conversation with Sean O'Malley about your money in the markets at the opening bell, where the markets have opened mixed as hopes for a trade deal between the U.S. and the European Union are keeping some fresh records in sight. But Wall Street's also looking at earnings from tech giants like Alphabet, the parent company of Google, and Tesla. Sean, as we look ahead at what's happening on Wall Street there, we've gotten into the leading economic indicators, the impact on the tariffs. But I want to go just take a step back to a conversation we had last hour about cryptocurrency. Two legislators that want to make sure that those ATMs that are going up all over the place that, you know, claim to let you, you know, invest in some way or buy or purchase cryptocurrency are somehow on the up and up. And I'm casting no aspersions on state legislators or members of Congress, but this is such new stuff. I just wonder would you be as cautious in counseling people to approach those crypto ATMs as I would be?
More so. Uh-huh. You got to remember, my training is in anti-money laundering, anti-fraud. Crypto, I checked the figures while we were on break, and the FBI reported just last year $5.6 billion of fraud in crypto, up 45% from the year prior. So yes, crypto is gaining in popularity and impact, but it is still a very, you know, wild, wild west type marketplace. The number of fines and regulatory actions in this space are non-trivial. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is a real lack of enforcement, in other words, really almost complicit action by the federal government and the Trump administration. They're looking at possibly allowing 401ks to start investing in crypto. My strong advice is don't do it unless you can lose it, because it's basically, you know, go to the racetrack instead. You'll have more fun.
You will.
And your odds of winning are probably about the same.
And you've got a president who has made more than $1 billion off of, again, allegedly.
$3 billion.
$3 billion off of
documented $3 billion since he got inaugurated off of his meme coins. Yes.
So don't look for him to be a big proponent of strong protections. No. And that gets me to the final point on that, because Wisconsin Congressman Brian Stile was leading the charge for, you know, quote unquote, crypto week last week in Congress, which they claimed was going to put the first good regulatory framework in place to protect consumers, banks, the economy, small businesses, everybody on crypto. I'm going to say from a completely uninformed perspective, I've seen the coverage of it. And I don't know if you know or have any opinion on the crypto bills that did pass and go to the president last week.
I have an opinion about those bills and the regulatory environment. Anytime you have an idea that is being pushed forward by very wealthy people who already have a lot of money as a way for other people to make money, I would be very skeptical. It's probably a great way for them to make money. Not necessarily for you, you know, on Main Street America to benefit yourself. You know, stay with the tried and true. Don't get out over your skis and don't bet on something that is literally backed by the full faith and credit of nothing.
Sound advice from about your money in the markets from Sean O'Malley. Sean, nice of you to join us from Lower Manhattan there. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. Let's bring in Joe Sopecki and kind of continue that conversation in terms of, you know, again, whether Congressman Stile is looking out for the constituents of his district or the folks on Wall Street, and contrast that to Representative Ryan Spouty and State Senator Kelda Roy's last hour talking about looking out for Wisconsin consumers on cryptocurrency. Joe, I think I know where you and I would put our money if we had to bet on one or the other of those groups of public servants looking out for us.
I thought crypto was just the dog in Superman.
No, turns out that there's more. Yeah.
Oh, it's
no, not much more, but yeah.
This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And the insistence by Republicans that they get to write the rules and their choices to date, which include one of the craziest parts, which is, and there's a lot of crazy parts, of the Trump economic plan they passed via reconciliation, are new rules for meme coins and how you can't do a corruption with your own meme coin unless you are President Donald J. Trump. They carved out a loophole for their boy. I mean, it's just insanity. And of course we need rules of the road and regulation. And I wish Democrats fortitude in the fights to come and to just say, you know what? Regulations and rules of the road are required and they are a good thing. We have let Republicans and conservatives define every bit of regulation as bad for business. And that's BS.
You know, Brian Stile was, a staffer for Paul Ryan before running for Congress himself in that same seat. And it just strikes me as, again, trying to give the appearance of being a wonk on something, in this case, crypto, and hoping that, much like with Paul Ryan, you know, the appearances outweigh the actual heft of any legislation that Paul Ryan or Brian Stile would work on.
Yeah, it's one of the curses of the Trump era, which is Republicans now believe that they can get everybody to just listen to what they say and not to actually watch what they do. They think talking a good game is enough and that the policy doesn't matter. That's not how the world works, and they're going to find that out at the ballot box sooner than you think.
Well, that just takes us to another Wisconsin congressman, Derek Van Orden, who, again, lacking any substance, is really good at throwing out the rhetoric, and in this case, the Russia-friendly rhetoric, as he's now calling for the imprisonment of former President Barack Obama, essentially parroting what Russian Ron Johnson had to say, which was parroting what Tulsi Gabbard, another Russian asset, had to say about this whole 2016 Russia, Russia, Russia thing. Why are we talking about it right now again, Joe? He said rhetorically.
Well, the answer is that he doesn't want to be talking about Jeffrey Epstein, which we'll get to, I'm sure, in a moment. Yes. I think there's two ways we need to talk about this particular piece of it. One is how, like, just stupid it is. And then the other is the more serious take. So let's start with the stupid ones. First of all, Derek Van Orden recently protested, perhaps a bit too much, that he's his own boy and he doesn't work for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? That was just a couple weeks ago.
I do. No, he had a colorful word that he used, that he is not one of those people for Donald Trump, not one of his little, let's say, puppets. And that lasted an hour.
Yeah, and he's not doing a very good job of asserting any independence or doing anything other than just following the orders and saluting, you know, President Trump and saying, yes, sir, how high, sir, no matter how absurd. And so now let's talk about the absurdity of this Obama conspiracy that Trump is blathering on about. Like, they are claiming they have Obama dead to rights on a secret meeting that took place in early December of 2016 about Russia, Russia, Russia. That is a meeting that I have read about in multiple books, including books from people in the meeting, like former National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes. And after that meeting, Obama went out into the press room and gave a national press conference saying that Russia did not hack the voting systems and impact the actual votes of the 2016 election. And you have now National Security Advisor, former Senator Marco Rubio, who led a 3-year investigation via the Intelligence Committee that concluded Russia used active measures to try and influence the 2016 election. So that's the absurdity, is they're claiming a conspiracy that everyone from Barack Obama to Marco Rubio has come out publicly and said Russia tried to influence it. They didn't actually change vote totals. So what the hell are we doing here? But here's the very serious part. Uh-huh. Unless you want to weigh in on the absurdity.
Take it.
It is deeply, deeply troubling to have a president of the United States from the Oval Office falsely accuse a past president of treason. You know, we worry about red lines. We talk about approaching or crossing red lines. This is incredibly dangerous and incredibly harrowing. And shame on every Republican who knows better, which frankly should include Derek Van Orden. Whatever you think of the guy, he's not an idiot, right? He might be out over his skis a little bit. He might not be the brightest member of Congress, but he's not a dumb. He knows better. And all of these Republicans should know better. And the fact that they are willing to go, well, that's just the cost of doing business in the Trump era, to have that level of accusation levied by a sitting president is deeply, deeply troubling and underscores the need for voters to excise all of this rot from our politics.
Well, and there is something dangerous and harrowing, as you said, about Trump making these claims, these false claims against former President Obama, going so far as to post AI video of Obama being arrested and put into prison. But there is this reason why Trump had to use manipulated video showing Obama being, arraigned and charged with crimes. And the reason is because we have actual video of Donald Trump being arraigned and going to court and being convicted of 34 felonies. And when you are a convicted criminal in the Oval Office and you want to make sure things don't get a little bit worse by your name showing up in some way, shape, or form, we don't know exactly the degree, in the Epstein files, boy, you're going to go nuclear. And that's where they're going, is they're going nuclear on Russia and Obama. Because, again, when you got a convicted criminal, you got no place else to go except desperate.
I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah.
Is a schoolyard taunt.
Right.
Not a way to govern this country or to conduct yourself if you are the person responsible for the decision whether or not to launch nuclear weapons. I don't know how else to put it. Mm-hmm. This is the presidency of the United States is a serious job for serious people. And many of us have known for more than 10 years how deeply unserious Donald Trump was. I am glad to see more voters, particularly on the right, recognize that and say that before, unfortunately, Republican members of Congress are doing so.
Joe Specky giving us the update on what has truly become silly season in a terribly serious way. A local update is next for some of you. Others, some final news and notes here. We'll also check in with James Kelly from our Civic Media newsroom in Chippewa Falls. Tomorrow I'll be in Oshkosh. We'll be talking to UWO Provost Ed Martini, also State Representative Lee Snodgrass, and Winnebago County Executive Gordon Hintz. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, James, how are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We're going to check in with Civic Media's James Kelly. That was me, in case you heard. Did you hear two of me there?
I heard two of you, and yeah, I was,
that was
absolutely.
Look at that. I made it till the final segment of the show without accidentally hitting that mute button.
That's all right.
That's what happened.
I messed up.
I should just go home. Just do the show from home, Pat. Stop floating around.
Get out of here.
James Kelly will be checking in from our Chippewa Falls newsroom in just a bit. Let's wrap up things with Joe Zepecki here, something I've been meaning to ask about. One of the Democratic state senators, Chris Larson, has publicly put out a petition. It's got some legislators' names. It's got some local government officials' names. I see, looks like labor leaders on here as well. And it is essentially a 9-point plan that he thinks any Democratic candidate for governor should sign on to. Any Democratic nominee, could be Tony Evers, could be somebody else. It includes the guarantee of child care for every Wisconsin family, safely closing the Green Bay prison, doubling the income threshold for Badger care, a $20 an hour minimum wage. And Joe, I don't know if there's a right answer or wrong answer. I'm going to present it this way, though. Is this the kind of thing that voters will like because it shows Democrats not being squeamish and here's exactly what they stand for? Or, much like Read My Lips, No New Taxes, are these candidates painting themselves into a corner that they're going to regret doing later on? Or maybe it turns them off with moderate voters. What was your initial take on Senator Larson's 9-point plan?
I respect anybody who is willing to say, this is what I'm fighting for. And I respect the hell out of anybody who is doing the work of winning support for a legislative agenda. In January of 2027, for the first time in a very long time, it is entirely possible that Democrats will have control of the governorship and both houses of the legislature. And the job of Democrats, in order to win that opportunity, is to say, here's the things that we are going to work on and we are going to try to do. And for Chris Larson or Dianne Hesselbein or Greta Neubauer or any of the candidates for any of these races or any of the candidates for governor, this is exactly the type of work that should start now. And so I tip my cap to him. I might quibble with why those 9 things and not these 9 things. And that's the work of the next, what do we got until January of 2027? I'm doing math on the radio again.
Oh, no, don't do that.
17 months?
Yeah.
18, 19 months? This is what we need to be doing. And so I appreciate Senator Larson putting it out there. He's an important leader in our party and in our movement. I don't think this is the be-all, end-all and the final word on the matter. I think there will be other legislative proposals and platforms put out by candidates, whether that's, you know, folks like Vining or Jacobson running for the state Senate. But good on Chris for saying, here's what I believe, here's what I'm willing to go to the mat for, and doing the work of winning support for that with people who are willing to put their name to it. That's what we have to be doing right now.
And whether it's a pledge or an ironclad promise, whatever it is, when you can get it down to 9 points, when it's something you can put on a piece of lit that you're handing to a voter, that means something. People want to see that, you know. So good on them for steering the conversation that way. Joe, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Have a good start to the weekend here.
You bet. I'm looking forward to Webb's Burgers after 12 straight
exactly.
Before the end of the season,
yes.
Even if it didn't happen this
yesterday
time.
Was only number one of the next 12 that's coming up. All right.
That's right.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Cheers.
Let's check in with James Kelly a day late. That's my fault. But James is here now from Chippewa Falls to tell us the stories he's covering up in Northwest Wisconsin for Civic Media. James, how are you?
I'm good. I see you make it to Madison, the headquarters, the state capital. You forget about the little guy, Pat.
I was just going to say, immediately I went Madison, and I'm like, he forgot his roots. And yet, here we are, a day late, but we're here. Let's start with a Turtle Lake company turning food waste into energy.
Yeah, so this company called Varesco AD, they've been operating up in Barron County since 2017. They just did a 25,000-square-foot expansion to add a depackaging machine. So essentially food, you know, from the grocery store that doesn't get sold, its expiration date, goes to this center, the food becomes energy, anything that can be recycled is automatically put into recycling, and anything that can't be recycled is automatically put into the incinerator to make even more energy. So they say they can power 2,300 homes currently. They sell that to XL Energy.
Interesting. Okay. Down to Duran now. The library there is looking to digitize their old newspapers. And I like this because in the past, people tried to save old newspapers by like turning them into microfilm or microfiche or whatever. But that too can degrade. Whereas once it's digital, you know, it truly has a better chance of lasting forever. Tell us about that project.
Yeah, definitely interesting, because I think this is really one of the only ways where you can look at history through the eyes of the people who were actually living it at the time. You know, we get the hindsight 2020 when we read history textbooks, but if you read a newspaper article from 1865, which is as far as they go back, you get to see what people were really thinking about that day. Mm-hmm. So that's a fundraiser that's going through next Friday, July 31st until 6 p.m. There's a creative contest fundraiser and a silent auction.
All right. And there's a bait shop controversy going on up in Washburn County that you're following as well.
Yeah, this one got a lot of headlines over the last week or so. There was this 15-year-old up in Washburn County near the Spooner Lake area who was running kind of a roadside bait shop, kind of like a lemonade stand, which will come back into play. Somebody reported the stand for zoning violations because it's an agricultural zoning area. So the zoning committee initially shut it down. And then people in the community got pretty upset because they liked the teenager's gumption. They liked his entrepreneurial spirit. So they allowed him to reopen the shop this week by using the 2019 lemonade stand law, which allows minors to operate these temporary shops without restrictions.
Jeez, so many different ways that you can, you know, use the levers of government for good or for evil, as the case may be. James Kelly, thank you for the update. Appreciate it so much. Have a great day up there.
Have a good one.
All right. Thanks to all of you for being here as well. Tomorrow, busy day from Oshkosh. We'll be talking to Winnebago County Executive Gordon Hintz. We'll be talking to State Representative Lee Snodgrass of the Appleton area. We'll be talking to UW Oshkosh Chancellor Ed Martini. We'll talk a little bit about that event that's happening in Oshkosh as well, the EAA Air Venture fly-in. I'm Pat Kreitler. You can follow what we do at Up North News, upnorthnewswi.com, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Have a great day.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.